This is Jean McMillan interviewing Kay Lee Collins on February 7th, 2012. He's giving us the history of the Salisbury Band. May I have your full name, please?
Lee Collins.
And where were you born?
Manchester, Connecticut.
And your birth date?
January 19th, 1941.
How did you come to this area?
I grew up in the Connecticut River Valley in East Windsor, and after I got my bachelor's degree in music education, I came back to Connecticut and was offered a job in Bristol, Connecticut. And I taught in Bristol for 8 years. Barb also had graduated from Gettysburg College with me, and she came to teach in Bristol for 8 years. And I wanted to go from a city-type school system to a smaller rural, more rural-type system, and there was an opening in Region 1. So I got the job when we both moved up here in 1970, and I spent 21 years teaching in Kent and Cornwall elementary schools. And living, we bought a house in Lime Rock, and so that's so we have lived for the past 40 plus years.
And how did you get involved in the Salisbury Band?
Well, I was a, was a music teacher, not in Salisbury. As I say, I was in Cornwall and Kent, and they were looking for a director, and so they came after me.
That's always nice.
Yeah, I did direct the band for a short time in the early 70s, and then took over as director in 1980 for the next 15 years.
Were there bands in the area before Salisbury Band?
Yeah, quite a few of them, actually. The Salisbury Band started in 1928, but it was composed of people who had played in other bands over the years. Quite a few town bands started up after the Civil War. When the guys were mustered out, they took home a lot of equipment, quite legally. To the government, just gave it to them. Rifles and muskets and musical instruments. And so in the late 60s, a lot of town bands sprung up throughout the East and West. And although we don't have any record of anything that early in Lakeville and Salisbury, when you look at some of the pictures taken around the turn of the century, you can see that some of those instruments were definitely Civil War vintage. They were old but well made and well used. The earliest one I've seen any pictures of or record of was the Barnum and Richardson band that was associated with the Iron Company in Lime Rock, and they had a stalwart bunch of guys. One picture there's probably about 220 or so people there. Interesting, a number of them Mediterranean types with big cigars and mustaches, and probably came from East Canaan, the quarries, or the quarries here in Salisbury. They shut down, the Barnum & Richardson shut down about 1920, I believe. 23 is the date that's sometimes given for the last operations in Lime Rock. The Lakeville Grays began, I don't know when they began, but probably maybe they overlapped or about the same time. They were a handsome bunch of guys. We got a whole photo of them in their gray uniforms.
Is that why they were called the Lakeville Grays?
I presume so. Although there was a famous band called the Washington Grays, and I don't know why they were called the Grays. Although Sometimes the grays came from horses, you know, because gray horses were quite distinguished and very classy in those days. But there were other bands in the area, the Cornwall Cornet Band. A friend of mine who's since passed away, Dorothy Heininger, who was a chamberlain, used to remember the Cornwall Cornet Band practicing in their kitchen when she was a girl. They would sneak down and listen to them around the corner. They were all men, of course. There was the Canaan Citizens Band. There was a photo of them posed on the steps of some building. I don't know who, but there were probably 14 or 15 men in that photo of the Canaan Citizens Band. It's interesting to look at the old photos, too, because you can see the same man, the same player, same players, I should say, in different groups. And you can see him age a little bit. And one guy, what's interesting, he plays trumpet in one band, and he plays drum in the other band. And each time when he's posed, he always has a cigar sticking out between his index and middle finger. Half-smoked cigars, you know, so it's easy to trace him.
Oh, it would be.
And again, so many of my information about the Salisbury Band comes from Jim Du Bois, who was one of the first members in the band, and he remembers dates pretty well. He thought the Lakeville Grays were disbanded in the 20s, and he at that time would have been about 16 years old and played the fife in the Hubert C. Williams Fife and Drum Corps, which was a group that lasted for a half a dozen years or so. But Harry Eggleston, who was a trumpet player, and had played in several of these bands, he and a half a dozen guys evidently got together and said, well, we ought to have a town band. Lakeville Grays are gone, and they wanted something besides just a fife and drum corps, so they got together and formed the Lakeville Salisbury Band, it was called then, in 1928. And we're still going on today.
Terrific. Tell me a little bit about the instruments that came from the Civil War.
Well, instruments were fairly well developed by that time. Clarinets, flutes, they may have used fifes too. Drums, of course, were fairly basic. Brass instruments were still in the getting developed. The thing about brass instruments is, well, I'll put it this way, the instrument that you play with all your fingers, the reeds, woodwinds, have got to be reachable, and they were fairly set in their configuration, although the fingering systems changed a little bit. So a clarinet was pretty much a clarinet. Brass instruments, though, because you only are using three or four of your fingers for valves, they can be made in any configuration, and the interesting thing about the Civil War instruments were so many of the big horns faced back over your shoulder. The bell, instead of being out in front like they are today, you can see these pictures, you know, Gardner and Matthew Brady, a lot of photographs, and they're marching along, and they're in the front, of course, so the soldiers can hear the music. The bells face over their shoulder. Now, those were extremely rare today. You'll hardly ever see them because they were just melted down and for scrap, I suppose, because when you're playing for an audience, you don't want the bell going over your shoulder. But and some of those, though, they're still were fairly crude, but they would last. They lasted, and so I'm sure some of the instruments that we saw in those early photographs of the Barnum Richardson Band were still Civil War horns.
Good heavens. Mm-hmm. Now, you said that The band started about 1928, and I believe you said that Harry Eggleston was the first director?
Yeah, Harry Eggleston was the man who ran the McNeil Insurance Agency. I guess it wasn't Wagner McNeil then, but it was McNeil. That's the way Jim phrased it. And he had no real training as a director, but he was evidently a fairly imposing man. He was fairly stern. He was he had a good sense of humor, but he was you didn't trifle with him. What he said went. Which is always valuable for a director.
Absolutely. Who were some of the other directors after Mr. Eggleston?
Actually, fairly few. Harry led the band from 1928 till after the war. And during the war, the band probably was fairly tenuous. Jim Du Bois himself served in the Army for a couple of years, and I don't know what the activity was. After the war, they evidently regrouped the band, reorganized the band, but it was kind of on its last legs, and they were simply ready to disband because nobody really had the energy to keep it going. But a new band director came to Housatonic Valley Regional High School. That was Bill Meter. And the way Jim described it, they had a dinner over at the inn in Falls Village. I forget what he called it. But the inn was a going place, and that was the place to have a dinner. And they invited Bill Meter, who was the new director, and they kind of put the arm on him and said, okay, you can take over the instruments, you can take over the finances, you just please come and direct the band. And Bill said yes.
Terrific. And
yes, it was. It was a real boost. And so Bill did it from about the late 40s, maybe 1950, somewhere in that area, until the late 60s, probably about 20 years. And as a high school band director, the band really grew, and it thrived in those years because he had a lot of kids from the high school, and it became a sizable group.
By sizable, how many, maybe?
He would have had 40 people in there. Yeah.
How many members do you have now?
Well, it varies. We shortened the name. When I took over as director in 1980, we shortened it to the Salisbury Band, instead of the Lakeville Salisbury Band. In the early days, there was a lot of competition and pride between the two villages, and you were from either Lakeville or Salisbury, or Falls Village, or Taconic, or Amesville. I mean, the local village was your home, and there was no way that they were going to have the Salisbury Band composed of a lot of Lakeville people without having Lakeville in the banner.
Right.
So anyway, so today it's not as much of an issue, obviously. Anyway, so the what was the question?
I asked you how many members were in the band now.
Yes, okay. We are one of the few town bands remaining. One of the very few. There is the Florida Legion Band in New York State still. There's a Ghent band. There's none that I know of in Connecticut that is really a town band. Or in Massachusetts, certainly in our area.
We're unique.
Yeah, we are. And we also play concerts and parades. And the reason I'm saying this is
now,
because,
I was going to ask you about offshoots from the Salisbury Band.
The Salisbury Band always played concerts and parades. We still do today. when you have high school kids, you can get a lot of them on the street. When you have a band, and today we are mostly adults, we have fewer percentage of those people who want to be on the street. So we now will have, for a parade, we'll have 15 or 18 people, maybe 20, marching in a parade. On the 4th of July, when we have probably the biggest concert of the year, we'll have close to 40 people. And there'll be people who come in and play concerts. And we purposely have the quality of, I shouldn't say the quality, the difficulty of the music is such that a good musician can come in and maybe come to one rehearsal or even sight read, because we have people coming from Massachusetts and from towns from New York State who are beginning to make this a regular thing. They'll come to play with the Salisbury Band. They won't rehearse with us, but we have a core of people who will carry us, and we are joined, and so we have maybe twice as many people for a concert, certainly maybe three times as many as we have on a parade.
What's the Quick Step Hot Shots?
Oh, the Salisbury Band Senior Quick Step Hot Shots. We started those in about 1984, maybe something like that. There were occasions, still are occasions, where we are asked to play for something. Not a concert as much maybe as background music. And so we have a group of musicians, which is fairly fluid, and we play out of a standard book, just like a dance band will. But we play for things like the Crop Walk at Regional High School. We play for the Salisbury Fall Festival. We have the Bandwagon from the Rotary Club. We play there. And so we'll play background music that adds festivity. We played on a Maple Brook school every year for an occasion down there. And it's, you know, the music is fast and loud, but the players aren't. That's what we have to say. And it's fun. You know, we have striped jackets and the straw boat or the plastic styrofoam boat. And so we have a lot of fun, and we don't rehearse. Again, we play the same stuff, and it works. People like us.
And then there's the Brass and Hot Chocolate Society.
The Salisbury Band Christmas Brass and Hot Chocolate Society. There again, that was started at the request of Barbara Eddy, Art Eddy's wife, who worked for the Lakeville Journal. And the Lakeville Journal, she wanted to have a carol sing. The old, the Lakeville Journal building, what's the building, what's the name of where they used to be? Remember down in the village?
Oh, the Pocket Knife Square?
Pocket Knife Square, that's right. And so she wanted to have a carol sing, and she wanted to have some brass instruments. And of course, Bob Esterbrook played in the band. And so we got together, a group of, probably eight people, and we played Christmas carols out in front of that building, the Pocket Knife Square, the brick building.
It used to be the Holly Manufacturing.
That's right, the Holly Manufacturing. and it was cold. Oh, I remember the first time it was freezing cold. But we had a good group of people, and there was enough light, and we had a good time. I remember going in to, I remember my daughter playing French horn, and she simply had to go inside the Journal building to let her horn thaw out, because a French horn, you know, has rotary valves.
I used to play a French horn.
And they freeze up fairly easily. And she was kind of coming in and out, and I thought she wasn't feeling good or something. And Barb said, no, her just valves are freezing up. We did that for several years, and in fact, actually, we then went across the way to the Bianchi's to K&E,
mm-hmm.
They had a cafeteria downstairs, and so we would go in there and have cookies and hot chocolate afterwards for a couple of years. And that's how it kind of became the Salisbury Band, Christmas Brass and Hot Chocolate Society. And then John Harney got wind of this and thought it would be great to have a similar gathering and light up the tree at the White Hart. And so I think for a couple of years we still did both, but then I think we simply stopped doing it. Bob Esterbrook was the one that suggested that we simply move the whole thing instead of trying to have two things. And so we started playing for the tree lighting at the White Hart, and it blossomed to the point where we were going to Canaan for a tree lighting, for Cornwall, Sharon, Litchfield, Morris, when I stopped directing in 1995, I did not continue, and I haven't kept up with them today, but they're still going to these different tree lightings, and which in their turn have become real festive affairs. John Harney used to invite us inside afterwards for cookies and hot chocolate at the White Hart. And today it's turned into the hometown holidays with light parades. You know, they decorate the fire trucks, and they have, it's a Chamber of Commerce.
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. It's all started with those, with, you know, the 10 or a dozen of us standing up by that and trying to read our music by the light of the Christmas tree. You know, the trouble was we couldn't start playing until they lit the tree, because we couldn't see the music.
Sure.
You know, and so it was, they said, it'd be nice to play ahead of time. We said, we can't play until you light that tree.
Oh, right.
Anyway.
When did you have rehearsals, and where did you have rehearsals?
In the old days, the band rehearsed in the town hall. Upstairs in the old town hall, there was a quite a nice, what do you call it, ballroom?
A very large room.
Yeah, and it had a stage on the end. In fact, we put the Oblong Valley Players put on a couple of plays there, which I was a part of. My wife and I were both a part of. And so the band rehearsed there. And in the summer, and when it came marching time, we rehearsed in Salisbury Central School parking lot, and then the Salisbury School Central School lower building, because Jim Du Bois was the custodian at Salisbury Central School, and he could have the keys, and we were actually able, this is back in the 70s now, the early 70s, that we were able to rehearse there. And then we went to the town hall and rehearsed, and then the town hall burned in 1985, and then we went to the library, and I say we. I was involved actively in 1980, and we rehearsed upstairs in the library, in the kids' room, in the children's wing, and we had to haul all those folding chairs up from the basement and then down every Tuesday nights. We rehearsed Tuesday nights. Then the new wing was built on, and that was probably about 1990. I don't know, I can't say that for sure.
No, it was done in the
70s. The new wing? The back wing was.
Yeah, because I was packing books for the library at that time, and in the 90s I was working there.
Well, how come, why did we rehearse down there? Oh, I bet that that back room was taken up with stacks.
It was.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's why it was. Okay. Because then when they moved those stacks out, then we were able to rehearse in there, but it became a community, a community room.
Yeah.
And we rehearsed on Tuesday nights, and Bob Esterbrook was our baritone horn player. I think he was the only baritone player. And one time he respectfully requested we might consider it doing Monday nights because he had to make up the Lakeville Journal on Tuesday nights. And it made a real late evening for him and Mary Lou. And so everybody agreed to it, so we rehearsed Monday nights, which actually worked out better because the library's closed on Monday. And we weren't disturbing anybody if we got there early, we got set up. So, and ever since, we've rehearsed at the community room, and they have given us a storage room downstairs, which is great. It just works out beautifully. We used to haul stuff up and down the stairs at the town hall, but all the bass drums and big horns and all that stuff works beautifully at the library.
Who's the director now?
Friso Hermans. Well, I'll put it this way. I stopped in 95, and Scott Heth from the Audubon, head of the Audubon in Sharon, who had a double major in forestry and music, and is an excellent trumpet player and fine musician. He plays a keyboard man. He plays all around. fine musician. He led the band for, I think, 9 years. And then Friso Hermans, who is now the director, orchestra director at Chippewa Valley Regional High School. He has led us for the past 6 years. So Friso, again, we're going with high school band directors.
Do you have anything else that you'd like to add to what we've already discussed?
Well, again, we are in, as always, kind of a state of flux. We have seen bands around us fold. We play parades with the Lakeville Hose Company and other fire companies during the summertime, and we may be one of two or three bands in the parade. Even in my memory, I remember bands in the 80s. There'd be huge drum and bugle corps. They were just great big groups of kids, and they have folded. They have gone out of business. And the Lakeville Salisbury Band, I should say the Salisbury Band, still carries on. The number of marchers is getting less. The number of kids is getting less. We make a big pitch every year to involve young people, and they're less and less interested. They have more and more demands on their time. It's amazing the activities the kids go in the summertime, to have available to them in the summertime. So we're continuing to hold our own, and we have to reconcile musically music that is challenging enough for accomplished musicians and accessible enough for people who are not as accomplished. And it's just this is a lot of double talk.
It's a fine line.
Saying that you've got to try to please everybody and to make both the players and the public
enjoy it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Been my pleasure.